From the Danker studio on Library Square, this is The Rundown, an exploration of local news, current events, and issues that matter to you. The guest we originally had scheduled was unable to make it to the studio this afternoon, and so we're going to air an interview from our archives, one with Pete Ashdown, founder and president of local internet services provider X-Mission, and we'll be looking at surveillance and privacy on the internet.
A lot of people say that, well, I've nothing to hide, so I don't care if they're watching me. Well, what you should be aware of is that there is a potential for criminal activity on the other side of the monitoring. People can gain a tremendous amount of information just by having this power.
That conversation and your summary of the day's top local headlines just ahead on The Rundown here on KCPW. But first, these messages and Access Downtown. Thanks again for tuning into The Rundown. I'm Roger McDonough. Coming up later on the show, we'll rebroadcast an interview with X-Mission founder and president Pete Ashdown on privacy and surveillance online. But first up, we have these local headlines. Commercial jet manufacturer Boeing has racked up sales at the Dubai Air Show this week, so far pulling in around $100 billion worth in new orders from airlines. The Boeing 777 represents a significant portion of those orders, which, it turns out, could be good news for Utah's economy. Boeing is considering Utah as a possible site for a new plant dedicated to building the new 777s. For more, here's KCPW's Ryan Cunningham.
Boeing officials met with Governor Gary Herbert last week to discuss the possibility of constructing a new production facility in Utah. The facility would specialize in the production of Boeing 777s, scores of which have been ordered in Dubai this week. Many of the planes were purchased by expanding Middle East-based airlines such as Emirates. Boeing already has a presence in Utah. The company has a facility in Salt Lake City for manufacture and assembly of parts for the 787-9 Dreamliner. In addition, a plant in West Jordan was purchased this year, also allocated for Dreamliner component production. According to Boeing's own data, the company employs over 800 Utahns. Following last week's meeting, Governor Gary Herbert was enthusiastic about the prospect of Boeing expanding its operations in Utah. In a statement, the governor said, quote, "I am grateful for the partnership Utah has with Boeing, and I appreciate the interest in growing the existing Utah operation. One of the country's best businesses expanding in one of the country's best places for business makes a lot of sense for many reasons," unquote. When reached for comment, a representative from the Governor's Office of Economic Development shared the governor's enthusiasm, but said they can't elaborate further until state officials discuss more specifics with Boeing. What could be an economic coup for Utah would be a bust for the state of Washington. Boeing tried to reach an agreement with unions at their Seattle area facilities, but was unable to do so. In lieu of this dispute, Boeing is looking elsewhere to manufacture the 777s. According to Boeing CEO Jim McNerney, the company will decide on a site to produce 777s in 2 to 3 months. Ryan Cunningham, KCPW News.
Utah officials say a scattering of avalanches in the Wasatch Front Mountains over the weekend may be an opening act for more slides this week. The Utah Avalanche Center reports 3 slides were recorded on Saturday and 5 on Sunday, including one that carried a skier about 150 feet down a mountain. The center says no one was injured in that slide, which occurred near the top of Little Cottonwood Canyon. Forecaster Drew Hardesty told the Deseret News that fresh snow that fell over the weekend on top of weak, older snow makes it likely that more avalanches will occur. Officials say there's a risk for more slides through midweek, particularly above 9,000 feet in elevation. The Avalanche Center is a partnership between the U.S. Forest Service and other state and local agencies. A number of prominent people are asking President Barack Obama to commute the sentence of a Utah music producer serving 55 years for selling $350 worth of marijuana while keeping guns in his house. The Salt Lake Tribune reports that the appeal was filed at the White House last week by a lengthy list of former judges and prosecutors, together with scholars and notable one-time Utah politicians. Also adding their signatures were social activists, including Daniel Ellsberg and singer Bonnie Raitt, in all 114 people. Weldon Angelos has been held up as an example of what's wrong with mandatory sentences. Prior to his conviction, he had no criminal record. Even the judge who sentenced him called it a miscarriage of justice. The father of two was 23 when he was put behind bars in 2004. Angeles founded Extravagant Records in Utah. And that's our local news summary for the day. I'm Roger McDonough, and you're listening to The Rundown here on KCPW. Stay with us. The guest we had originally intended to have on The Rundown today was unable to make it to the studios this afternoon, and so we'll be rebroadcasting an interview from the archives, a conversation with Pete Ashdown, the president and founder of local internet services provider X-Mission, in which we look at government surveillance of the internet and the expectations of privacy online. So first off, you are on record as saying that you won't give the government metadata, which is sort of data about data, or allow broadband monitoring of internet traffic passing over your network. And I was hoping you could give us a little bit of a primer in the ways in which the internet is monitored by the government and the role that internet service providers play in that monitoring.
Well, let me first address your first statement. We do want to cooperate with law enforcement in that they have to provide a proper warrant to us. Now, I think that precludes wholesale monitoring because a warrant is very specific in that you have probable cause. And I'm pretty sure all of my subscribers are not involved in a single crime. And so for them to come up with probable cause against all my subscribers would go against they can't come up with probable cause for all of my subscribers is what I'm saying. So they can't do wholesale monitoring. They have to be very specific in what they want from me. And the majority of the requests we've received from law enforcement have not been proper warrants. I would probably say the number of warrants I've received, proper warrants, could be counted on two hands.
How about the non-proper warrants or the subpoenas?
Over 100.
Okay.
And this is over the course of the last 20 years of doing business. Now, you asked the question about how the surveillance is taking place. In the internet business and in technology, have known about this type of government monitoring since about 2006 when Mark Klein came forward and said that in AT&T's Network Operations Center, the NSA had an intercept room.
And Mark Klein was an AT&T employee or an NSA employee?
I actually believe he was an AT&T employee that was blowing the whistle on AT&T. This was in the Bay Area, and a significant amount of AT&T's traffic was going through there. And the NSA had a room in their facility where the lines went in and the lines went out, and nobody knew what was going on inside, but it was pretty certain that they were intercepting all the traffic that was passing over AT&T, and that includes their phone calls and their internet. The internet was built on a foundation of trust. It wasn't built with the thought that we need to protect the data from being intercepted from point A to point B. They were just trying to get from point A to point B. And so the majority of data that traverses the internet is unencrypted. And I think what the government has done is they've assumed, well, if we have a corporate partner who's willing to let us intercept, then it's free for the taking and we can look at it. I disagree with that concept in that I don't want a government that is monitoring the internet and monitoring our communications, and that's why I've been pushing back against it.
And you've suggested that that is a violation of our Fourth Amendment rights as citizens of the United States.
Yeah, and it's a violation in the sense that they are papers and effects. I believe the email is a paper and effect, and you cannot intercept that and inspect the contents of it without a proper warrant. And I have to qualify a proper warrant again because much of what has been happening with the NSA has been going through the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court.
FISA courts, yeah.
Right, which is a secret court with secret proceedings, and the results are secret, and it's very hard to get any information out of them. I don't think that's how courts should be set up.
But if the FISA court gave a warrant to the NSA that said, all right, we need this from X Mission, would you have to comply? I mean,
well, in one case, we received a FISA court request through the FBI, and what I've understand is that I've learned since that time is that the NSA doesn't directly serve these requests; they go through partners in the FBI and local law enforcement to get this information. So we did respond to a FISA court warrant where the monitoring was specific. It was on a single IP address, And we did set that up. What I really objected to on that warrant was that it was open-ended. They could monitor it for as long as they wished. They actually came into X-Mission and installed a box on our network that captured all their traffic. 6 months into it, I called the FBI agent and I said, how long is this going to go on? And he said, I don't know. And they pulled it about 3 months later. So they monitored a customer for 9 months. I was unable to keep a copy of the warrant. I was only able to look at it and take limited notes as to the technical aspects of it.
You knew the IP address, but did you know sort of the concern or anything like that?
It was national security was the concern. And I found it somewhat humorous in that the website that the individual was running at this IP address, I couldn't imagine anything further unrelated to national security. So if it was a front, it was an extremely good front, but there was never any arrest that I heard of that came out of it. So who knows what it was? And as we learn more about the NSA, it could have just been somebody on a wild hair.
You know, we hear most about metadata, and basically that's a record of who we called or emailed or chatted with. But I wonder about that sort of extra step, how much further that surveillance has gone. There was a report in the Wall Street Journal that talked about NSA officers who were using eavesdropping power to spy on their love interests.
Yeah, that they actually had a code for when that happened. It happened so frequently. A lot of people say that, well, I have nothing to hide, so I don't care if they're watching me. Well, what you should be aware of is that there is a potential for criminal activity on the other side of the monitoring. People can gain a tremendous amount of information just by having this power on a financial basis, on a identity basis, on a blackmail basis, on a political basis, that I don't trust them to have this power.
The individuals, not necessarily the agency, but the individuals involved, or both.
The individuals involved in the agency. But yeah, we've heard other whistleblowers say that the agency itself has used this to blackmail people in the military, blackmail politicians. There's only one individual that said that and hasn't been corroborated, but I can see that potential happening because it has happened in the past. It has happened inside the FBI. It is the nature of large organizations to have corrupt individuals in those organizations, and they abuse that power. But that's what the Constitution was set up for. You know, although we didn't have the internet in 1789, the framers of the Constitution had just gone through a struggle with a very oppressive power. And they used things like aliases to go out and post bills on trees and posts and get their message out with having the fear that they could be hanged for spreading that information about. So I think that anonymity is an essential part of preserving democracy.
I want to go back to a question, which was there's this idea of the metadata. But I guess I'm not clear about, and maybe you might know as somebody who works in the field, how much further that kind of monitoring has gone. Can you what is the capability of these organizations?
Well, let's talk about the metadata first. There's a lot of justification, and the Utah Attorney General's office also has a law that they put on the books that allows them to get subscriber information out of internet service providers.
Those are administrative subpoenas?
Yes, the administrative subpoenas, which is another law that we have resisted and we believe is not constitutional. But their justification goes back to a Supreme Court case called Maryland versus Smith, where they refer to something called pen registers, which goes back to the telegraph days, where a pen register essentially recorded the metadata of who was calling who. And when the telephone came about, it was phone numbers calling phone numbers. And the Supreme Court said that that was public information, that if you have a phone number, that's public information, even though your number may be unlisted. And when you call somebody, you're putting out that information to the phone company, and in turn, it becomes public information. I have a little bit of a problem with that. I still think it's private information as to who you're talking to. But they, in this court case, decided it was public information. This has been extended to the internet, where they believe that if you email somebody your transaction, your email address, their email address becomes public information, and therefore it's open to any government agency coming in and requesting that. Or your IP address on the internet. When you're using the internet, you have an address which is technically unique, And it can be traced to your billing account and your home address and you. So whatever you use on the internet can be traced back to you. So majority of the requests we get are tying those IP address to subscriber information. However, what the NSA is doing and what I think has been revealed more and more through the Snowden documents is that they are not just looking at metadata. They are essentially using a Hoover vacuum to vacuum everything up and store it all with the intent that if they need to access it, they can go back and look at your entire record on the internet. So they have automated indexes, automated software and procedures that take all that information and tie it to a single IP address or even tie it to, I would presume, to a single person. And their argument is as long as we don't look at the contents of the vacuum cleaner, we're not violating the Fourth Amendment. And when we need a warrant to look at those contents, we'll go and get one. I don't think that's the way it works. I think they need to get a warrant before they start intercepting data.
And this is the suggested, this is what's been suggested will be the use of the Bluffdale data center that the NSA is building or maybe has finished building.
It's very close to completion. I actually toured it last fall. And this was, you know, I was aware of the interceptions going on, but I really, when we took that data center tour, it was like, look at how big our generators are. Look at this amazing facility. And when you spend $1 billion on anything, it's going to be impressive. And the questions I was asking, and I somewhat regret this, is that there's always been this mythology about the NSA, that they could break any encryption, that they could read an erased hard drive. And even though I technically know that these things are close to impossible, there's this, they have Star Trek technology out there and teleporters and such. And so I was asking them questions about that, but they wouldn't answer my questions anyway about what they were doing. So, you know, the sheer size of the facility, I should say, does kind of indicate that they are making an enormous hard drive out there and they're just storing as much as they can for perusal at a later time. There was an individual from the governor's Office of Economic Development out there who asked the question, well, how many jobs is this place going to create? Which is a good question. And their response was zero, because this is a lights-out facility. They can run everything remotely.
Well, that's remarkable.
It is. And so I have to ask the question is, what was the benefit in putting this out there? Certainly it created construction jobs. But in the long term, it's going to be using 1.5 million plus gallons of water a day, consuming a tremendous amount of power, you know, which is still mostly coal-fired in Utah. I think the cost severely outweighs the benefit.
We've talked a little bit about both the federal and state requests that you get, and they are very different. One is from the administrative subpoena level, and that's kind of been justified by the state legislature because they say that, for example, in cases of child abduction, for one, that might be a case where time was of the essence, and so getting a warrant takes too long.
Anyone can argue for child protection. I mean, I've got children, and I want to keep them safe, and I want to keep Utah's children safe. I want to keep all children safe. All too often, laws are passed in a hurry with that call that we need to protect children. And this law was passed in a hurry. The legislature is in the process of reviewing it, which I'm thankful for, and they're taking a second look at it because the Attorney General's office and law enforcement has issued thousands of these requests, and they don't have a lot of accountability as to how many cases have come out of it, how many convictions have come out of it. And so they are rightly asking the question as to is child endangerment that big of a problem in Utah that we're issuing thousands of requests and we're getting nothing out of it? The framers of the Constitution did not make exemptions for heinous crimes. Certainly any crime involving a child is a heinous crime, but they were clear in that you needed to go through a warrant procedure. Now, I've received probably about half a dozen of administrative subpoenas, and none of them had exigency, is what they call it, urgency, in the sense that I needed to respond within a week to 2 weeks on all of them. If a police officer can get a warrant standing by your car at the side of the road, I think that they can go get a warrant to ask for subscriber information from me.
Do you face any repercussions for not complying with the requests, administrative subpoenas, or even from the federal level?
It has been overwhelmingly supportive from since we went public on this back in May. The thing that has somewhat disturbed me is that we've stopped receiving requests. We used to receive one or two requests a month from law enforcement, and that has gone flat to zero. So since I went public with this, I've received no law enforcement requests for information. I should add, when we received the administrative subpoena request from the Attorney General's office or law enforcement in Utah, we send a very nice letter back from my attorneys that states that we don't think it's constitutional and we would be happy to respond to a warrant. They have never followed up with a warrant. And the Attorney General's office makes the argument, well, we don't have the subscriber information, so we don't know who to place a warrant against, and I have invited them to make the warrant against me. When a subscriber uses my service or puts their data in email on my service, it essentially becomes my papers and effects. And if they want to rifle through my papers and effects, I'm happy to work with them, but they need to have a warrant.
So likewise, the state of government with the administrative subpoenas says we're trying to protect our children. But the NSA would also argue that doing what they do is about protecting Americans and maintaining security in a dangerous world. What about that argument, that gathering this data is keeping us safe from, say, the threats that are out there?
I believe that there are concessions that have been made since 2001, 9/11, which are not worth it. I don't like the security theater that we go through at the airport. And I think that, you know, the NSA and members of Congress who support the NSA have come forward and said, well, we have caught over 300 terrorists or stopped 300 terrorist incidents as a result of the monitoring we do at the NSA. Well, let's see those court cases. Let's see those convictions. I'm not comfortable with the people being held without trial at Guantanamo any more than I'm comfortable with somebody saying we caught a terrorist without a trial. We have a procedure that I believe should be followed in all of America's actions, that we're not following in the name of national security. And it is being applied not only to foreigners, it's being applied to Americans. And I don't think it's right, and it needs to be reversed. This national security argument will always come up as the blank check, but I don't buy it. I think that we've had greater threats in the past than terrorism, and we've dealt with them in a constitutional way.
So we are over our allotted amount of time, but Pete Ashdown, ex-mission founder and president, I want to thank you for the discussion. It's been illuminating.
Thank you.
That was Pete Ashdown, founder of X-Mission. You can hear today's conversation and all of our past shows at kcpw.org. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back. And thanks once again for tuning into The Rundown here on KCPW. Our show was produced by Lauren Colucci. We had additional help, as always, from Jesse Ellis and Mr. Tyler Ford. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. Tune in each weekday at 5 p.m. for an exploration of local news, events, and issues that matter to you. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for listening. The Utah Business Report and Marketplace are coming up next.